for NPR comes from the Kresge Foundation, building the capacity of nonprofit organizations through challenge grants since 1924, on the web at kresge.org. From Lou C. Kerr, for support of the NPR Fund for New Initiatives, helping to develop NPR's new programming and new media. And from the Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide, on the web at www.fordfound.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Last year, a respected Southern literary magazine based in Oxford, Mississippi, suddenly stopped publication. It's found new financial backing and moved operations northwest to Little Rock, but its name stays the same.
The magazine is like a person who is born with a name. You may go through all these different changes and you may move and marry or whatnot, but you should keep your name.
I'm Bob Edwards. The Oxford American returns tomorrow on Morning Edition from NPR News.
You can hear Morning Edition every weekday from 5 to 9 a.m. right here on Central Coast Public Radio Station KUSP, your NPR member station. Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It's January 13th, 2003, 6:30 p.m., time for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and humanity, every week. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed on Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Tonight, we are talking with regular geek Miles Elam about web accessibility. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers, and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. Web dev, or web development, in its simplest form, is making content available in hypertext markup language, also known as HTML, on the internet via Hypertext Transfer Protocol, or HTTP. To those non-geeks out there, web development is making websites. Websites have become such a common thing in our society that finding things without the use of websites seems to be almost impossible. You could say that the current American culture is web development dependent, or at least moving towards a dependence. As our culture becomes intertwined with the web, legal issues arise. Tonight's Geek Speak focus on one issue of import, the availability for websites to be accessible to everyone. Miles Elam is here to give us the lowdown on web accessibility. Also in the air room is John Tracy and Sean Cleveland. Welcome geeks to Geek Speak.
Good evening, Lyle.
Hello.
So Miles, it's nice to have you here in not just the standard generic geek fashion, but actually as the expert of the day. And can we just start out by asking, what does accessibility when it comes to websites really mean?
It's ensuring that that everyone can access a website. When I say everyone, it's, you know, you're not going to have a guarantee that 100% can access it, but it's making sure that elements of the web page are not made so that people who, for example, are blind cannot access the information on the website.
I think of a website as a mostly visual thing. How do you mean access it without having sight?
Well, actually, when you have a web server, it's serving content. Many times it's serving just text. It's serving a web page. And it's our browser, the actual client application, that's turning that into something visual that we as people with sight would use to read it. So
you're saying something like that the web server that you're actually accessing the data for is giving you information, and you're translating it into color and differences of color so you can read it. But in reality, you could transmit it or receive it and view it in different ways.
Yes. In fact, the original web browser, actually, I don't know if it was the original one, but it was definitely an early one. It's called Lynx. It was text only and was used on Unix terminals back in the early 90s.
It's funny because now the demand for text only is growing with the rise of PDA and cell phones.
Yeah, that's another area actually where accessibility helps out. But.
Yeah.
So who defines accessibility? I mean, how do you define what that is?
There are a couple places that define it. You have the World Wide Web Consortium, which is headed by Tim Berners-Lee. He's one of the luminaries there. He is seen by many as the inventor of the World Wide Web. And they have what they call the Web Accessibility Guidelines. And they also have an umbrella project called the Web Accessibility Initiative. And in the government sector for the U.S. government, you have Americans for Disabilities Act of 1990, mm-hmm. Where you have Title I, Title II, and Section 504 and 508 are the specific.
Okay, let me step back to the World Wide Web Consortium, because I know that that's a really important factor in standards, in mm-hmm. the Consortium for Standards on the Web. Is that body a commercial enterprise, or is that body something else?
No, it's a standards organization. It's I don't know in terms of a nonprofit status. I haven't looked into it, but I don't see much in terms of their webpage that they're selling services. Really, what they are is defined as being, we're trying to find ways of getting people to interoperate better.
And are they accepted as the facto experts or the standards
yeah,
body
yeah,
of the
they
web?
Have been for some time.
And it's not a government agency?
No, it is not.
Okay. So it's kind of
pan-national.
It's kind of it is pan-national. Okay. So it's kind of a grassroots help and support for creating standards that allow us to use the web
effectively. The W3C is physically located, or at least the offices are physically located in Switzerland. Tim Berners-Lee is a Swiss citizen. But everyone basically references them. In fact, many corporations will submit information to the W3C for ratification. In other words, many of the standards that are on the web today were submitted as proposals by Microsoft and other organizations and
other corporate entities.
Not just corporate entities, but also non-corporate entities would submit items as well, and everybody would kind of hash it around and go, okay, here's the best of the best, or the things that everyone has out there that so they can work together.
Okay. Now, why should a web developer really care about web accessibility?
It depends on a couple of things. One is, how many people do you want your content to reach? With regards to someone's personal homepage, it really does depend on how amenable they are to people actually getting the content, or whether or not they don't care. They are actually a different class than, for example, a corporate entity that's on the web.
So when we're talking kind of legal issues, we're talking about corporations and the potential for them
Let me put it to you this way: your own house, you are not required to put a ramp for wheelchair access in. You're not a corporate entity. You're not a government agency. You're your own person. You decide how you want to do it. Whereas if you have a business, you do have to, put in wheelchair accessible ramps, make sure the doorways are wide enough for wheelchairs to get into, and similar. That's basically the idea there. And for example, with government sites or people who are doing government contracts, you have to follow basically the ADA guidelines and Section 508, I believe, is the specific one for corporations that states that you have to make content accessible.
They say content, or they say information, or what do they mean by that?
When I say content and information, I actually mean them to be the same thing. However, this is not to say that every single graphic that you would have on your page would have a representation. This, for example, if you have a site that has stock quotes, no one really expects you to have that pretty graph that that's going up and down, to have a text representation of it. There's that saying that a picture is worth 1,000 words, and there are just times when you cannot do that. But having the information available to say, this is what the price was at this date, and the price, a year previous to that, it was this date, that type of information is just text. It's just read out.
Now, a court case recently actually happened, I think it was
Southwest Airlines.
Right? And as I recall, the defendant won, which means that Southwest Airlines won the case.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about that.
That was a case where a woman went to Southwest Airlines website. They had a web-only deal. If you went to the website and got a ticket, it would be a lower price than you could get normally, say, over the phone.
Okay.
And when she went there, she was a blind woman, by the way. When she went there, she found that the site had navigation that was based on images. In other words, you click on an image and it would take you someplace. But the
That's
image
a very common thing, actually.
Yes. But the image didn't have any alternate text, so to a braille reader, or not to a braille reader, to a text reader, is what she had, I believe. When you look at it, the page just ends up saying, this is a link, this is a link, this is a link, this is a link, which doesn't really help you to find out there's information that where
how to
you're
get a ticket.
Yeah. It doesn't give you context as to where you're going or
so
where you
are.
So
she called up, I'm assuming, and tried to get the same deal on the phone.
Right. And was told by the person on the phone, sorry, that's a web-only deal. She explained, I'm blind, I can't, and my text reader won't allow access to your website, and sorry, it's a web-only deal. And after that point, that's when she hired a lawyer.
And the judge actually decided that, I mean, why did the judge say that Southwest did not have to supply this service to disabled?
Myself and many accessibility people out there have disagreed with this. Basically, the judge was coming with the concept that a web page is not a physical location and therefore is not bound by the guidelines of the Americans with Disability Act of 1990, which personally I find it absolutely ludicrous because you're saying that, because, for example, with Southwest Airlines, that you're only able to get it through the website, and the website is not available to the blind, not able to get that good deal, you're basically putting a tax on being blind.
Right.
Not only does the person have to say, okay, I spent money to get a reader so that I can navigate the site, but you're saying that if you are blind, you must pay more intrinsically than the person who is sighted.
Now, I mean, okay, so that's and that case could actually be brought back to an appeal, right? That's
still pending. I don't know the whether it has been appealed, I'd be very surprised if it weren't.
Okay, let's step out of the legal realm and let's talk about from a web developer. I'm an ex-web developer, or I soon to be a web developer again. I don't know. Mm-hmm. What is except for legal issues, what's the reason for making something accessible to a general public?
Or what's the reason for not making it acceptable?
Well, that's a good point, too. I mean, is it hard to make a website accessible?
If you make your website conform to the HTML standards set from the W3C, in other words, you send it to a validator, the W3C has www.w3.org, has validators for HTML and CSS, a styling language.
Is a validator a person?
No, it's a program. So you pass it a URL. For example, you're making a web page. You pass the URL to your web page, and it will tell you, the program will tell you, this is valid HTML, or this is valid XHTML 1.0. Or it will tell you, this is wrong, and this is wrong.
So W3C, it specified the specs. It's also saying, here's some tools to make it easier for you to apply by the specs.
Exactly.
Now, are you saying that if you make if you follow their specs, you have an accessible website?
No, but you're about four-fifths of the way there.
Okay. What's the rest of it?
The rest of it is making sure that, for example, images have correct alternate text.
That's an attribute of an image on a website. Okay.
And that's something that a validator really can't test. It's really up to semantic meaning. When you go out and you look at the site, is that an image of the text products, a very common thing, or is that a spacer graphic? A spacer graphic, it doesn't really matter. Put as alt with an empty string, and the person who's viewing it with a text reader wouldn't see it.
So if it's an image of a product, is it good form to then describe what that picture is in the alternate text for that picture?
Well, if it's a thing that's just a picture of the text product, then it's good form to say alt the attribute alt in that image and say alt equals product. And you basically have the exact same access to it.
Miles, I think Sean was asking if it's a photograph of the product, what would the alt text be?
Is it good to say, like, picture of a Linksys router?
Yeah, that's actually all you really need to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's nothing all that elaborate.
But if it's a picture linking to another page, then it's good to put that actual link in the alternate text.
Many times, this is actually a style thing with W3C. They recommend that when you make hyperlinks, that you don't say click here and hyperlink click here, because that doesn't have any semantic meaning. It's
right.
actually saying, and here we have the, you know, accessibility guidelines for the ADA, and putting that in hypertext so that you have a link to saying accessibility guidelines for ADA is the link. In other words, context-based linking.
So not just for images, but actually for just text links.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's very
so
much
the
a
text
style
link
issue
should
and less of a accessibility.
So the alternate text for a linked image should actually be the address for where it's linking to. Would that be right?
Well, the image should have alt text for saying, because many times, and this is actually an aspect of accessibility or usability, which many times goes hand in hand, where you have an image actually represent where you're going,
right.
where it's linking. When you have an image that has nothing to do with where you're going, it's not a very usable website, whether you're blind or whether you're sighted.
And I think having the address wouldn't really be a good thing, because some of the addresses,
yeah.
especially when it gets into CGI script, you get
the address information, of course, is available for the text reader as well.
Yeah. So. And as a matter of fact, there is a title attribute that you can put onto most HTML tags, and specifically it's used for anchor tags or the ahrefs, the linking tags on a website, to be able to put more information about that.
Now, just to let people know, traditionally in a browser will use the alt text attribute of an image to show you that little pop-up yellow description. That's normally the same content. Sometimes it's title, now that Microsoft's kind of suggested that format. We'll be back in just a minute with the same subject. You're listening to Geek Speak. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me is Miles Elam and Geeks Sean and John. We are talking about web accessibility. If you would like to join the discussion, you may call 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. On the next Talk of the Bay, Deanna Zachary hosts a discussion about the new cruise ships coming into the Monterey Bay. Good for business, bad for the bay? We'll talk to all the sides at the cruise ship industry on Talk of the Bay. That's tomorrow here at KWSP at 6:30. For more information about our local talk shows, go to the public affairs section of our website, kusp.org. On the next Mind, Body, Spirit, host Drek Albertson leads a discussion about shame. What are effective ways to deal with shame and maintain healthy self-esteem? Guests include therapist Alexis Johnson and counselor Deborah Allen. They'll also take your phone calls. That's Mind, Body, Spirit, Tuesday at noon on listener-supported KUSP. You are listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me is Miles Elam. We are talking about web accessibility. Also in the air room, John Tracy, Sean Cleveland. Please join a discussion by calling 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877.
You'd think after 2 years you'd get their name straight.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
You think after 2 years we'd get some new theme music.
What, Miles, what about supporting, I mean, I hear a lot about websites, you know, it doesn't work with Netscape 4. It doesn't work, well, nothing works with Netscape 4. And it doesn't work with different browsers. What about supporting many browsers? I mean, are you going to have problems if you do accessibility? Are you going to have problems then supporting multiple browsers?
Well, that's one of the main things behind standards, was saying that if you put in this HTML or you put in this CSS, this is the way that it's supposed to look. So that a browser that doesn't look that way, you can say, that's non-standard. I wish you would look like the standard. And as it happens, the newest browsers, Internet Explorer 6, Opera 6 and Opera 7, which is coming out soon, Mozilla, Netscape 7, all support the same W3C standard. So it's getting more and more that if you code toward the standard, you're going to have the output look very much like what the W3C says it's supposed to look like.
What about supporting those older browsers?
With the newer specs from the W3C, for example, XHTML, the strict model, and using CSS, what you have is web pages that don't look as good, for example. They don't have the same styling information that the newer browsers have, but they're still accessible. You still have all the text, all the content that you would normally have.
So that's kind of how you're defining accessibility, is not experiencing the exact same thing, but experiencing the meat of the content. And that's sometimes, I guess, a good way to look at what you're trying to
I guess it really comes down as to what you consider to be the intrinsic resource of your site. If it's a site that is dedicated to having a gallery of images, say a photography site, you're not going to have you're not going to have the same target audience. In other words, you can't really go into in depth with every single image and say, oh, well, this is this image and it's a picture of a sunset, but we have a Joshua tree in front of it and it have this gradation of these colors to these colors. It doesn't really work. But, for example, with many corporate websites where they're selling something, their content is supposed to be the information, the thing that is important.
Or the ability that the site is providing, like buying tickets online.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, or that functionality.
Okay, what about a situation where, I see Flash all over the place. What happens when you're trying to do like a multimedia site with Flash? Does it have support for accessibility?
They're trying, but they're still a little bit ways away from getting something working with that. When you have Flash, you are basically excluding people who need visual assistance from viewing the website, and for that matter, people who don't have the Flash plugin. But that's a whole other issue.
That's hard because Flash is all about animation.
Many times it is. And in fact, there are situations, for example, with games or with some things where the animation or the graphics are the important thing to a site. But chances are 99, I would say, maybe not 99, but I'd say about 90% of the Flash animations that are out there aren't there for content. In fact, they're there to obscure the content, to make it look flashier, the fact that the site doesn't have any content, but we're going to make it look nice.
Harsh, Miles.
Someone call in and tell me I'm wrong. Like,
how do you really feel, Miles?
Miles, and actually, if you do want to call in and tell Miles it's wrong, 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877, it wouldn't be the first time. Miles, besides Southwest, I'm sure actually especially Southwest at this point, are companies focusing on web accessibility?
No, for the most part, a lot of companies don't consider it very important. At the same
Why?
Time, they don't see it important. They didn't see putting wheelchair accessibility to their offices as important either. In terms of the bottom line, when you talk about people who need visual assistance, this isn't necessarily people who are completely blind. This is people that would want, for example, the text to be bigger on a site, but the font size has been set on the site so small that people can't use it, and when they try to tell the browser to make the font bigger, it isn't available. Basically, it doesn't affect the bottom line to the company. There aren't enough blind people in the country to have people have it make a big impact on
and
their sales.
That statement is exactly why the ADA passed.
It's exactly why the Americans for Disabilities Act was passed, was because it was an area where people thought it was important to support.
Sean, okay. You had a point?
Yeah, I want to know, what are the ramifications of this court case? I mean, basically, you know, looking at the verdict here, the court holds that the defendant Southwest Airlines website is not a place of public accommodation under Title III of the Americans with Disabilities Act. And accordingly, Southwest has no obligation under Title III to make its website accessible to the visually impaired.
Yeah, it's giving a carte blanche to companies saying, accessibility in the web isn't important. It's really sad.
That is
interesting
amazing.
To say that their
for
site...
For corporations, anyway. For government sites, it's still important.
It's interesting to say that their site is not a location. We have taken the metaphor of websites so strongly, I don't comprehend it, a difference of their business and their website. I think of them both as locations.
In terms of when I was talking about the language in the text saying a public accommodation, I really do wonder what the judge was thinking when a website that you're going to be buying tickets from is not accommodating you. It's not an accommodation for you.
If it was a business you had to walk in and buy tickets from, that was definitely a public location.
Yeah,
I can't believe Southwest would let this go to court. I mean, they're an airline that is supposed to be for the people. They're friendly. You know, it's the cheapest way to fly.
Only if you buy online.
You know, why didn't they just fix it? You know, I don't...
For many sites, dynamic sites, it tends to be some work.
Costs a lot.
Have to go back. It costs a certain amount, but in the grand scheme of things, websites really are not a big chunk of most companies' business models. I mean, let's be honest here. A website, if it costs $1 million for a company to make, chances are they spend a lot more than $1 million on the rest of their business model, unless they're a web business.
It depends on the company. JCPenney's just cut 2,000 from its web force.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Well, that's of course
and
the market.
And as I said, in terms of the overall company, the force that has to do with making their web pages is relatively small.
Probably.
So putting the money forth to make it compliant seems like it would be a drop in the pan, but that's a whole other side. But making images have an alt text and that's making it so that web forms don't rely on JavaScript and that you have a submit button.
So where do developers go? Web developers go to learn how to be a good person. I mean, follow these guidelines.
Well, you have the W3C guidelines.
www.w3c.org.
Yeah. Actually, the site is w3.org, but if you go to W3C, it'll redirect you to the correct location anyway.
Okay.
There are also books that have been published for web accessibility and how to basically go through a checklist. And when you go to the W3C site, they have a checklist saying, if you do these things, you are minimally accessible, you've made an effort, and here's, if you go this extra mile, then you're WAI level 2 accessible. And
where is that?
That's on the W3C site under WAI. Or accessibility, actually.
Just follow the accessibility links on W3.
Yeah, on the left-hand side, there's a nav that says accessibility. Click on that, and it'll take you to WAI.
So you're saying a lot of companies aren't following this, but we keep on mentioning that government companies have to follow. Let's explain that.
Government websites.
Government websites.
Federal websites. And that is under the guideline of Section 508 of the ADA deals with that. Electronic forms of transmission of data.
Yeah, in fact, I work at the university, and there is a whole ADA compliance for websites, and how it's always a discussion about, well, how much compliance do we need? What does compliance really mean? There's a lot of issues regarding that, and it looks like the W3C is actually coming out to be the de facto acceptance of the standard.
And actually, the for universities, it's not Section 508. It's actually Title II and Section 504 governs. That's actually the federal federal educational institution.
Okay.
That's a federal institution. 508 is for corporate entities.
All right. Are some companies going to this, making sure their sites are compliant?
Yes.
Okay.
There are some. Some of them, it's just because they made their sites go through the validator that, and they have people working for them that care about it that just, decide to put, do that extra little effort. It really is extra little effort to say, to put in alt equals products. In many cases, it's really not that big of a deal. For sites that are completely based on Flash, it really is an overhaul, and it means they have to change their whole way of thinking.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, and, granted, they're dragging their feet about it, and, in many ways, you don't blame them.
Well, from Salinas, we have Carrie, and welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you. I use a system called JAWS. Which is an auditory system.
I've heard of it.
I have less than 5% of my vision, and I do a lot of grant writing and also extensive email, and everything that I do with Word works perfectly with this JAWS system. And
so it's kind of part of the operating system in a way?
It's a separate software, but it is incorporated into everything I do, so I do not use a monitor at all.
It's equivalent to replacing the monitor, basically.
Right.
Okay.
And I use all keystrokes.
All right.
I don't use a mouse.
A pointing device wouldn't mean anything, of course, right?
Right. And what one of the comments that you just made really sparked a point of real ire for me, and that is that I can get into the Internet and actually access a website, but very frequently you were just talking about something being on the left-hand side and then clicking.
Right.
You
right.
can find, evidently, a main pick menu on the left of lots of things, and then for me, I arrow down, and when I press enter, which means the equivalent of clicking, it won't go over. And what I understand the over is now is to be another frame.
Right.
So
right.
JAWS does not want to go from one frame to the next.
That's this whole accessibility issue. What they're probably doing is they've got this sub-navigation menu that pops up, but it only pops up on this action that's called mouse over. So if you have a pointing device that's pointed to the item, it shows a sub thing.
I think she's more talking about frames, the framed site. So you click on another page, and it clicks in, and it goes into another frame. Which one were you speaking of?
Well, I've been calling it frames, and as it has been explained to me by sighted friends, what's happening is, for example, if I had your three names, and then under each of your names there was resume, hobbies, and whatever else, and I wanted to know what your particular hobbies were besides studying software stuff, and I pressed enter under hobbies, it should actually give me a list of those hobbies. But according to Sighted Friends, that often happens on a different point in the monitor that is kind of like crossing the midpoint.
It could be either one of these things, actually. It could be that there's a pop-up menu.
Being accessible.
Yeah. No, it's not. Exactly. The site's not built correctly.
In fact, I'd have questions about its usability as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would love it if you found a site like that, if you could send it to geeks@geekspeak.org.
Try National Writers Union.
NationalWritersUnion.org.
California State University at Sacramento.
Okay, it's a lot of places.
There are many.
I suggest, it's not going to work all the time, but once you enter and therefore activate the link,
mm-hmm.
try tabbing. It might tab you to the other frame that has the location in it, and then that would be a new page there. I don't know if that would work exactly, but it's worth a shot. You probably tried it, though.
Yeah, tabbing, alternating tabbing with arrowing.
I am so glad you called, because I want people to understand this. It's important to write websites to be accessible.
That's why I called.
Thank you very much.
That you're on, and I hope that at some point I can hear more from you, because I want to get better at this, and it's a point of huge frustration right now.
I would love it if you'd send geeks@geekspeak.org. I'd love to hear from you.
Very good.
Thank you very much for the call.
Bye.
That actually brings up an interesting point with regards to navs, when I was saying the left-hand side of the nav. But
we're running out of time.
It's such a great topic. It's so much information to it. Just not enough time.
This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. You are listening to Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxell. Miles Elam has been with us talking about web accessibility. The other geeks in the house, John Tracy, Sean Cleveland. Our producer, Maggie Cleveland. Answering the phones was Karen Schomburg. Thank you all for your participation in Geek Speak. And all those that called in, actually the one person, Carrie, called in. Thank you very much for making Geek Speak what it is. Without your input, it would just be us geeks geeking out. And who wants to listen to that? One thing that everyone does want to listen to, though, of course, is Two Steps and Blues with Charlie Lang. That's coming up next. This is Central Coast Public Radio Station, KUSB, Santa Cruz, KBDH, San Ardo. On the web at KUSP.org. And right before, we have a little bit of Stardate.
Stardate, January 13th. The panoply of constellations includes a dozen human figures. But there's only one king, Cephas, the mythological king.